Welcome to That You May Grow, a podcast that is done here at the Mount Vernon Church of Christ. My name is Jared Hammond, and I'm here with my fellow brother and fellow minister here at the Mount Vernon Church of Christ, Preston McElyea.
How are you doing today, Jared?
I'm doing good. Can't complain a bit. It's been a pretty good day, pretty productive, with still much to go. So,
well, we'll see how things go for me. I came in after teaching some English grammar this morning for the Lamb's Academy of Biblical Studies, and we were in a little more detailed stuff today, so we'll see how my brain does going through all this.
Well, I'm glad I was not in the class or mine would be fried, so we'll go with what we can do, and we'll make the best of it.
And it's a good thing you're in the hot seat running all the controls today.
That may be the worst thing of all of this right now. We'll see. All right. Well, let's get back into our studies. This will be the last of this first season of episodes that we're going to be doing on these names of the Bible. It may be the case that we'll pick back up on this same topic later on, but we're going to pull away from this after this one today on Isaac, and we're going to look at some other podcasts that we're going to be putting out. And again, we may come back to it later down the road, but after this one, we will be taking a break, a short break, and we'll start putting out more podcasts around April 1st. So you can be looking for those to be coming out.
Yeah, and when we come back on the first two, we'll be looking at a little bit of a different focus. Mm-hmm. We'll kind of shift gears a little bit, and so it'll be hopefully something that is interesting to all of you as our listeners. We've already actually recorded a couple of episodes for our next season, and I'm excited for those to be able to come out and for others to be able to hear some of these conversations we've already been able to have.
That's right. We've already had a number of people come in and sit with us and do some podcasts and plan to continue to do that with a wide range of different people from different ages. So hopefully that'll be beneficial to everyone. It's been beneficial to us thus far. So be looking forward to that, and today we'll close out with this last name of the Bible, looking at Isaac.
Yeah, we've been going through these names. I guess this is our 10th one now. It doesn't really feel like we've been going through 10, but here we are, 10th one, and Isaac just falls right next in line with those who we've been looking at. We've spent the last few weeks looking at the narratives with Abraham and Sarah and with Lot, but today we're focusing in on that son of promise that was born to both Abraham and Sarah.
That's right. You know, we remember even in our previous studies and what we saw, you know, with them, but one of the things that really stands out, and remember, they were very much up in age at this time. Abraham would have been 100 years old, where Sarah was at 90 years old.
Well, and in fact, when the time came that Sarah is told she's going to bear a son, it was pretty unbelievable. And in fact, you know, we find in Genesis 18, well, she would laugh within herself even at that thought that she could have a son.
That's right. And even the name, you know, giving this name Isaac actually means laughter. So it has a unique tie back to that initial laughter that she had in this being told that she's going to have a son even in her old age. But, you know, looking at all of that as a whole, it helps us to understand if we wait for God in faith, he will keep his promise.
Yeah, I mean, the finding Isaac coming onto the scene here is, it's just amazing to stop and look and trace back through the history to see what all it took for Isaac to be here, for us to see this man in the Bible, for him to have had the life that he lived. And none of it would have been possible ultimately, of course, without God, but at the same time, without the faith of his parents, Abraham and Sarah.
That's right. You know, and there's a lot that we can, you know, learn by looking to those who have led in a faithful manner, you know, to help us to understand how we're to go about doing the same thing. And we'll see that as we work through Isaac. But we'll also see some of the negative sides of the things that he did, just as Abraham did. So, you know, he kind of took a little bit of each throughout some of the things that we'll discuss, but we definitely see the faithfulness of Abraham moving right over into the life of Isaac.
Yeah, and that faithfulness is seen really in kind of the first place we really start to see Isaac as he's grown up a little when we come to Genesis chapter 22. And we see the clear faith of Abraham, because Genesis chapter 22, we find Abraham is about to go and offer up his only son Isaac. It's how it says in Genesis 22 and verse 1 that God would test Abraham, telling him to take up your son, go up on the mountain, and offer him up as a burnt offering. Well, Genesis 22, Isaac is old enough that he knows what's going on and knows at least what was required when they would go up for this sacrifice. And so, Jared, what lesson might we learn as we see all of this unfolding in Genesis 22?
Well, there's great lessons in trust that are seen throughout chapter 22. And one thing you immediately see is that he had a trust in his father Abraham, right? Abraham is the one who is taking him up by instruction from God, and he's going to ask Isaac basically to get upon this altar to be the sacrifice, and he's trusting in his father and what's taking place within this context, but he's also trusting in God.
Yeah, and just to stop and think about it, it reaches a point in Genesis 22 in verses 9 and 10, as you mentioned, that he's basically having Isaac climb up on this altar. And it tells us there even the fact that Abraham would bind him up. So Isaac is tied down to this altar. The wood is there being placed around and upon the altar. Genesis 22 and verse 10, Abraham now stretches out his hand to take the knife to kill Isaac in order to then do this burnt offering. Isaac knows all of this that's going on. In fact, he's already said back up into verse 7, okay, well, Dad, where's the lamb? Where's the animal that we're going to sacrifice? And Abraham has told him, God's going to provide. Trust in God. And of course, it even reaches again to that point, verse 10, Abraham's about to kill his only son when suddenly, as the text goes on, we see God does provide. And so, like you say, the lesson we can learn in that is that we can trust in God.
You know, you see that the trust helps produce a great obedience. You know, when you have somebody who is leading you, who you can trust in, one that you know that they're looking out for what is best for you, you have a more likelihood that you're going to be obedient to that person. And you really see that with Abraham, and even, you know, like you were saying, he's placing him on this altar. And now Isaac has some questions within all of this, but he's still trusting in the process, trusting in what mm-hmm. Abraham has told him, and ultimately trusting in God because the instruction came from him. But that trust is helping to produce that obedience that we see in Isaac.
And I think it's valuable to mention again the fact that while he trusts in Abraham, and he certainly has a certain amount of trust in God as he's growing up and he's seen the faith of his parents, it still didn't stop him from asking questions.
That's right.
And you know, I've heard it said before that the only way that we can learn, the only way that we can grow intellectually and spiritually is to ask questions. Just because we ask a question doesn't mean we lack faith. Instead, asking a question is us trying to clarify, trying to make sure that we understand that our faith is right, trying to make sure that what it is we believe, what it is that we're trusting in, is the right thing to be doing.
Absolutely correct. You know, you look at what's said there in Genesis chapter 22 in verse 7. It says, "But Isaac spoke to Abraham his father and said, 'My father.' And he said, 'Here I am, my son.' Then he said, 'Look, the fire and the wood, but where is the lamb for the burnt offering?'" Right? He's given under, he understands, okay, well, I see everything that's going on here, but there's something missing. Right? Where's the sacrifice? So it wasn't wrong on his part to ask questions. He's trying to gain better understanding of the whole situation. But what comes to be the answer is maybe not what he was hoping for, maybe not what he was expecting. But basically what Abram says to him there in verse 8 is, "And Abram said, 'My son, God will provide for himself the lamb for a burnt offering.' So the two of them went together." You know, you see that initial idea that he is, you know, curious about the situation, so much so that he's going to ask, and that's a good thing, right? Mm-hmm. Like you were talking about, it's good for us to ask questions so that we understand more clearly what our responsibilities are. But even when it's something, when the answer is something that is very difficult, even when it's something that's very hard for us to understand, if it's the instruction of God, we need to trust in it.
Right, and that sometimes can be a challenge still. Because even in this situation, yeah, we see the trust of Isaac, but also the trust of Abraham. When we get there to verse 8, like you've already mentioned, the fact that Abraham is pointing out that God's going to provide, well, it's not until verses 9 and 10 and then 11 and 12 that we start to actually see that Abraham has lifted the knife and he's about to kill his son. His son's already up on the altar. Everything is ready to go. And it's not until that point that now, verse 13, Abraham lifts his eyes and there's the ram caught in the thicket. There's the animal that God has provided. Sometimes it's going to be difficult. And doing the right thing is sometimes very challenging. Continuing in obedience is sometimes going to be a real challenge for us. But if we trust, we'll continue in that faith.
That's right. And what an incredible moment of faith it was, really, you know, in both of them here, in Abraham as well as Isaac, you know, to go ahead and be obedient in this situation. But you think about the impact that this moment likely had on Isaac in seeing his father's obedience to God the Father, and then how that would affect his the rest of his life and his obedience to God. You know, ultimately what they both learned in this situation is that God will provide, right? There were some questions, there was some concern, but at the end of the end of this scenario, God will provide.
Yeah, I would imagine that that's a point in Isaac's life that he would never forget. You know, he'd always remember that day that daddy was about to sacrifice me. And, you know, I can only imagine. Yeah, I can only imagine the stories he probably told his kids about that one happening.
That's right.
But, of course, that's just, you know, some speculation on our end here. But that's the type of thing that, understand, this is real. This is something that actually happened in his life that he actually was a part of and that he actually saw firsthand in that moment how God provided. And just think about the fact that, you know, God provided there, and he didn't have to lose his life that day.
That's right. You know, kind of moving away from this section here and this great faith that was seen and obedience and trust and all of these things, you know, sometimes when we look through the Scripture and we look at these different characters or these different names of the Bible, it's almost like we remove them in some sense from normal life, mm-hmm. right? But at the same time, they experience life just like the rest of us. You know, one of the parts that you'll find within the life of Isaac, it's something that we're all familiar with, is death of a family member, mm-hmm. right? And it just helps us to remember, you know, we're talking about people who lived in their time, who experienced life just the same as we do, who dealt with hardship, who dealt with loss, who dealt with heartache and things of that nature. And we see that he was one who would experience the loss of his loss of his mother. And I think did I get ahead of here?
No,
right. Genesis 23.
Yeah, yeah. And even come Genesis 25, we find where he loses his father. You know, he experienced the loss of both of those very important, very dear people in his life. But every time we find in the Bible someone experiences that loss, even still today, whenever it is that one experience is lost, there's always heartache that goes along with that. There's always difficulty and grief. And so there can be lessons learned in seeing how men in the Bible, such as Isaac, handle those particular situations. But there's also another, really a darker reminder every time we come across death. And it's a reminder that goes all the way back to Genesis chapter 3. The reason that we're having to deal with these things today, the reason that Isaac had to deal with that death, is because of what took place back in the garden. It's a continual reminder that despite all the good that might happen in this life, death is always knocking. The far-reaching effect of sin is always there.
It sure is, you know, and it's something that we're all going to, you know, have to reap the I don't want to say benefits of, because it's not any benefit to it, but you know what I mean? We're all going to have deal with these things in our lives, and we see it just the same there in Isaac. You know, shortly after even the loss of Sarah, shortly after the loss of his mother, an interesting statement is made after the choosing of a bride for Isaac. It's actually stated in the latter part of Genesis chapter 24 that in this receiving of a wife, it was something that comforted Isaac after his mother's death.
That's yeah, that very
chapter
last
67.
Verse.
That's right. So, but there's a lot more that we can say about this bride of Isaac. Some interesting stuff, nonetheless, that you can find in Scripture.
Yeah, when we look at that relationship between Isaac and Rebekah, what we find is a great lesson of how to love your wife. Now, there are more things that we'll have to say about Isaac and some of his family relationships as we continue through. But at this point, you know, let's talk a little bit about the love that he had for Rebekah.
You know, it's something that is very evident when you look through the text and how the Scripture speaks about, you know, how he is comforted by his wife, Rebekah, even in this time of the loss of his mother. But there's also areas where it shows that he has concern for his wife. You know, it's something that should be seen and reflected in our lives today, just the same as husbands.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there is such a skewed image of what the family is supposed to look like in the world today. And it's so far from what, you know, Scripture teaches us, and it's something that really needs to be on the forefronts of our minds and in our thoughts, is, you know, how to lead a home and how to be that loving husband, you know, for our wives, so that we're pleasing to God and glorifying God, but so that's also building strong homes and strong families.
And I would add to it as well, the not just the skewed image of the family and of the home, but at the same time, just of masculinity in general. Mm-hmm. That sometimes there's a real false impression today of what it is that makes a man and who a man is, and that there are certain things that a man just will not do. Well, we already mentioned the fact, okay, Isaac deals with the loss of his mother. Clearly, there's been some challenge there, some grief there, because as you noted from the very end of Genesis 24 in verse 67, Isaac is comforted after his mother's death in his new wife. Well, for one, that tells us that he finds comfort there. He takes comfort in his wife. Certainly, there's an emotional aspect to that. But sometimes our society might say, well, a man can't have any type of that emotion, that he can't show that. Isaac says something different here. He shows something different. And like you mentioned, when we get to Genesis 25, he shows a real concern for his wife. And that's really an interesting text there in Genesis 25, whenever we see in verses 19 through 21 exactly how that concern is shown.
That's right. I'm looking at the text now to bring the... I'm trying to get, find where you're at here.
Well, Genesis 25, 19 through 21, where it is we see the genealogy. And it's interesting because you go back up and you see the genealogy of who is it there, of Ishmael. And so the one who was not the son of promise, and it goes through and it gives the names of all of his sons. But then Genesis 25, 19 and 20, well, Isaac and Rebekah have no son. And so it's in verse 21 really where we see that great concern.
That's right, where it says, "Now Isaac pleaded with the Lord for his wife because she was barren, and the Lord granted his plea, and Rebekah, his wife, conceived." You know, there's several things that really stand out in that text, and one of the things, you know, that right around what we're discussing now is his love for her. Mm-hmm. He cared and he was concerned enough about her that he was praying on her behalf, that he wanted her to be able to have a child, and that was something that was... You know, we've already seen in previous studies the impact that that could have on a woman who is barren, who, you know, the kind of emotional distress and things it would have caused then. Well, he's concerned enough. He's praying to God, and he's trying to, you know, get his petitions heard by God. And really the second thing, and that's, you know, what I was actually fixing to say about that, was he's turning to God. He knows where he needs to turn as far as getting the answers.
Well, you think about even his own life. The reason that he's there is because of God, because God made the impossible possible. And he knows, okay, if there is anyone who can help my wife right now, it's God.
Absolutely. And he's seen it. He knows it. And we see it demonstrated again here in his life. And now we don't know exactly how long this has been, but we know that God has been very active in his life. As a matter of fact, even the selecting of this wife was a divinely selected woman, right? So God has been very active in his life, and Isaac is still turning to God for answers, for help, you know, with these problems, and he's concerned about his wife and hoping that she can conceive and have children.
Right, and thankfully, God blesses them. God answers the plea, and Rebecca is blessed with not just one child, but two. She's able to give birth to twins, Jacob and Esau.
Very interesting part of the text there and what all takes place with these two. But one of the things, you know, if we're really just kind of focusing in more here on Isaac, you know, something that you see, and it's maybe more in a negative light, something that you see with Isaac is showing a little bit of favoritism. You know, not long after they're born, right there within that same text, you immediately see that they're showing favoritism toward the children.
Yeah, Genesis 25, verse 28 says that, "And Isaac loved Esau because he ate of his game, but Rebekah loved Jacob." And it's something that, it's just kind of this little tidbit it gives right now, and in the coming chapters, that's going to become a larger issue as the whole narrative plays out. But it does show, you know, just a little bit at this point that while Isaac is a good man and there are great qualities there to follow, well, he's also a human like the rest of us, and there are some things that he struggled with like we might at times today.
Absolutely. You know, and it, like you say, it's really just a tidbit that we're given here, but we're going to see it has a greater impact a little bit later through the narrative. But, you know, it kind of shifts gears immediately after the mention of her being able to have children, have these twins. Then we run into a little bit of an issue where, you know, we need to keep in mind, we need to avoid making the same mistakes that those before us have made.
And it's interesting the way that all of it plays out when we come to Genesis chapter 26. Genesis chapter 26, as we come into this new chapter, we find that there's a famine in the land, and it's the first famine, in fact, it says, or besides the first famine in the days of Abraham. And during this famine, we learn that Isaac goes down to Abimelech, who's the king of the Philistines in Gerar. Well, that might ring a bell, because Abimelech was also king in Gerar. Quite a few chapters earlier, in fact, Genesis chapter 20, when Abraham was there. And what happened in Genesis chapter 20 while Abraham just happened to be in Gerar?
Well, Abraham actually had dug some wells while he was in that area,
right?
Hadn't he?
Yeah. He had dug some wells, and we find as well, that was unintentional right there. Dug wells as well. Abraham in Genesis 20, with Abimelech, actually, he offered up his wife Sarah and said that she was his sister. And now in Genesis chapter 26, in Gerar, where Abimelech is king, what do we find Isaac doing?
He is offering up his wife, claiming her to be his sister, just the same as Abraham had done. You know, like we stated earlier, where you see this moment where great faith is seen, and it had an impact on Isaac's life. Well, I don't know how much he knew about this event that took place in Abraham's life when he actually said, "No, this is my sister, this is not my wife." Regardless, we see him doing the exact same thing, right? He's lying to this man. He's saying, "This is my sister rather than my wife." And the text actually states that he did it because he was fearful.
Yeah, he was afraid, but he had no reason to be afraid. Right there in the middle of it all, Genesis chapter 26, beginning in verse 2, the Lord appeared to him, that's Isaac, and said, "Do not go down to Egypt. Live in the land of which I shall tell you. dwell in this land, and I will be with you and bless you, for to you and your descendants I give all these lands, and I will perform the oath which I swore to Abraham your father. And I will make your descendants multiply as the stars of heaven. I will give to your descendants all these lands, and in your seed all the nations of the earth shall be blessed, because Abraham obeyed my voice, kept my charge, my commandments, my statutes, and my laws. God says, stay here, and I'm with you. I'm going to bless you. I'm going to take care of you. And then immediately in verse 7, Isaac's afraid. And so he says, she's my sister.
You know, and it's very similar even with Abraham. He was reminded time and time again that God was with him. He should have had every reason to, you know, have courage to trust in God. And just the same here, Isaac, he should have known, okay, well, God is the one who has given me this instruction. I can look at everything that God has done in my life up to this point. I can see that he has upheld his end of the bargain every single time, right? Every promise he has made, he has kept. He should have had more trust here. And why exactly he wavered in his faith here, don't know. But what the text does state, it was because he is fearful.
And is that not a similar reason why it is today at times we might kind of falter in our faith, that we're afraid of what someone might think, we're afraid of what someone might say, we're afraid of what somebody might do to us. And so we just kind of, you know, shade the truth just a little bit, or we tell, you know, maybe part of the truth, but not all of the truth, just to try and save ourselves.
Or we miss an opportunity to, you know, teach someone else about the Bible or about God or about Jesus because we might be concerned about what they might think about us bringing that topic up. You know, are they going to think, oh, well, why are they doing that? Or are they going to think any different of us if they hear us speak about biblical matters? You know, and it may be the case that a little bit of fear slips in, and the next thing you know, maybe it's not to the point that we're doing something like Isaac has done here and lying about who his wife is, but it may cause us even to step back and miss an opportunity where we could have shared the good news with somebody else.
Mm-hmm. And so we can see even in this lesson of avoiding the same mistakes of those before us, we find another lesson, you know, hidden within there, that we should always trust in God even when it is that things are difficult.
Right, and we had already seen him trusting God when things were real difficult, hard to understand even there, mm-hmm. when he was going to be offered up as a sacrifice. It seems like it would have been more difficult in that situation, and he proved himself to be faithful in that moment, whereas in this one, he was lacking a little bit, you know, and I think that goes to show us just how on guard we need to be when it comes to temptations, because we never know in what moment it's going to be one that's going to overtake us rather than us being able to overcome it.
Yeah, and that's, I think, a good point to bring out there that I hadn't really thought about, and I think that shows sometimes that we might handle the big things well, but sometimes we might let some of the little things slide, and those can be just as dangerous as those big things.
That's right. Absolutely. You know, directly after this, there's another good lesson that we can learn from Isaac, and this is a little bit more of a positive note after this little hiccup or this little bump in the road, if you will. One of the things that you see directly after Abimelech saying, okay, I realize what's going on here. I saw you and your wife, Rebecca, in the tent, and you're not brothers and sisters. As a matter of fact, that's your wife. Why would you do that to me, right? Why would you lie to me? Well, following up that conversation, in Genesis chapter 26 and verse 12, it says, then Isaac sowed in the land and reaped in the same year 100-fold, and the Lord blessed him. You know, when you think about that and see what he was doing, it's a good reminder for us today to make sure that we're laboring. Make sure that we are going out, that we are working hard to provide for our own in our own houses.
Yeah, and matter of fact, I think that it's biblical, and it seems like I've heard it maybe in 2 Thessalonians.
That's right.
If man does not work, well, neither shall he eat.
That's right. I mean, and it's something that is very prevalent today, extremely prevalent today, you know, and how many people are not being that leader in their home, and you know, how many men are not being the leader in the home and going out and trying to supply for, you know, their family. You see that Isaac is a man that was going out into the field. He was working with his hands, and he was supplying for those of his house.
And it's ultimately not anything that Isaac did. Of course, we see verse 12 that it's the Lord who blessed him, that all the reward that he would reap is because of God. But in order for that to happen, he had to do something. That's why it starts out in verse 12 that Isaac sowed. And sometimes it is the case that we're not going to receive those blessings from God because we don't do our part in the process.
You know, even in all these blessings that are found, you know, sometimes things may be going real well for us and we feel like things are going great, but it's not always going to be what other people want to see, maybe. Mm-hmm. And immediately following this idea that he is very prosperous, we see that he had people who were envying him because of how well he was doing and how much God had blessed him. As a matter of fact, it says in verse 14 of Genesis chapter 26 that the Philistines envied him, right? They were envious of his great success, if you will, and it starts creating problems. And it really shows us in this next little section just how good Isaac is at resolving conflict.
Yeah, and it's a valuable skill that is really needed today. That I think if we're all honest, we all would like to be able to handle conflict a little bit better in our life. And when we see Isaac, Jared, I know you mentioned earlier about Abraham having dug wells while he was in that area back in Genesis chapter 20. And so it tells us in Genesis chapter 26, verse 15, the Philistines stopped up all those wells that Abraham had dug. And so now what Isaac and his servants are going to do after being sent away by Abimelech, is they're going to start redigging some of those wells.
He does, you know, and you know, he comes in and he starts digging these wells. It's the same ones that his father Abraham had dug even in the times past, and that they had have been, you know, filled back in. Well, he's coming in, verse 19, and digging in the valley, and he found a well of running water. Verse 20, but the herdsmen of Gerah quarreled with Isaac's herdsmen, saying, "The water is ours." So he called the name of the well Essek because they quarreled with him. So immediately he's running into some contentions. Once they do dig this well, there's others trying to say, "Okay, well, wait a minute. Now that's our water. You can't have that," right? Now, in a lot of scenarios, we could probably find ourselves in, you know, something similar, not necessarily regarding who's going to get the water supply. Mm-hmm. But in many other areas of our life, we can come into a situation just like this. Here's the question we need to ask ourselves. What do we do in that situation? Is it our immediate response to say, you know what? No, I'm here. You go find your own. I'm claiming this. This is mine, whether you like it or not. Or do we step back and say, well, you know what? There's probably more somewhere else.
He could have pulled, you know, the classic elementary school playground stunt of, well, you don't know who my daddy is. I mean,
that's right.
You know, Abraham dug the well.
Mm-hmm.
His dad is the one who originally dug it, and so he still had a certain right to it. But Isaac says, no, guys, let's just go dig another well.
That's right. That's verse 21. They immediately move, and they go, and they dig another well, and what follows in that same verse there, verse 21, and they quarreled over that one also.
And, you know, he could have done the same thing again.
Yep.
He could have, you know, raised a big stink about it, but instead, verse 22, Isaac says, let's just go dig another well.
And they did not quarrel over it, it says there in verse 22. So he finally finds a location where he can actually dig a well where it's not going to cause a problem with anybody else. But I don't know about you. One time, it would have been a challenge to say, you know what, especially looking at the aspect that it was actually Abraham who originally dug them, it seems as if Isaac would have had more claim there. But in order to, you know, keep the peace, he says, okay, well, let's just go a different direction. We'll dig another one. Well, at the moment of getting to the second one, putting in all the effort, we're not talking about a matter. We just talked about it in like 2 minutes, right?
Yeah.
We're talking about a long period of time to make this happen.
And also, this is digging a well out without heavy equipment and without, you know, trucks and bulldozers and all that fun stuff.
Absolutely. So come second well that somebody has a problem with, it would have been real hard to just say, you know what, let's go do another one. But in order to keep the peace, that's the kind of sacrifice that Isaac was willing to make in order to keep the peace with the people around him.
And if we jump a little bit further down in chapter 26, we see still, as Isaac is showing, you know, how we can resolve some conflict in our lives, we get down towards the end of the chapter, and in verse 26, we find that King Abimelech comes back to Isaac. And now, well, the last time Isaac and Abimelech spoke, Abimelech says, you're going to need to leave, you can't stay here. But now Abimelech is coming to him, and Isaac recognizes verse 27, why have you come to me since you hate me and have sent me away from you? And now Abimelech says, well, we see how God has blessed you, and we want to be friends with you again.
You know, it's really, it shows how much more he's willing to be the bigger man here.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it seems like first response for most people would have been, you know what? No, I tried with you before and it was problematic, so I'm done with that, right? But no, he's the bigger man here. And, you know, you could easily see someone getting swollen up with pride, right? And pride could be an issue and, you know, cause one to want to just push this man away. But he continues to show this ability to resolve conflict. And I don't think it's in any way showing that he's weak in any manner.
No.
But I think it's showing that he is more godly. You know, even right in between, sandwiched in between all of this in this same text, even there in verse 25 of Genesis chapter 26, it says, so he built an altar there and called on the name of the Lord, right? He was focused on living a life that was pleasing to God, you know, being one that was pleasing in God's sight. And part of that is being able to maintain peace. And we understand it more clearly now with a lot of the scripture that we have in the New Testament and the expectation that falls on us, right? That's Romans chapter 12, about the latter part of the chapter. But he understood it even then.
The blessing of God didn't come there in verse 20, 23, 24 until it was that he kept digging those other wells.
Mm-hmm.
What if he had just stopped at the first one or even at the second one?
I
wonder,
yeah.
You know, would God have blessed him?
Right.
Maybe. I don't know. But we don't see it until some peace is there. Isaac showed that he was interested in peace. God blesses him. Now another situation arises. Isaac could have, you know, created an issue with it and said, well, you didn't want anything to do with me back then. You told me to get out of town. Why should I want to have anything to do with you now that you see how great God has blessed me? That's not what Isaac did. Instead,
right.
Like you point out, Isaac, he's the bigger man here. He's interested in peace, and as a result, they're able to enjoy each other's company again. Verse 30, they have a feast, they ate, they drank, they arose early in the morning, swore an oath with one another, and Isaac sent them away, and they departed from him in peace.
You know, such a valuable lesson for us, you know, in thinking about our own lives and our own families and our own situations, to be able to, you know, work past something and ultimately at the end of the day to be able to sit down and share a meal together, to make this covenant or this promise that they made between them and to have this understanding, no, we're going to live peaceably. You know, it's such a valuable lesson, especially when you look around the world today and just how much strife and how much contention and how much, you know, just selfishness that there is in the world around us. It is a great quality that we find in Isaac for his ability to be able to maintain that peace. And it didn't come easily. This was things that he made great sacrifice, you know, to be able to maintain that peace. So very valuable.
Another lesson that we can find looking at the life of Isaac, and something that's still applicable to us today, is the fact that God can bless us greatly. This is something that we see throughout Isaac's life, and really even going back to the life of his father Abraham. God had blessed Abraham greatly. He blesses Isaac greatly. But we also find that with all of those blessings, there's a certain responsibility that might come with that.
That's right. You know, if you look there at Genesis chapter 25 and verse 5, it was stated there in the text that Abram gave all that he had to Isaac. Well, I think part of that is the very fact that he understands, yes, he's the son of promise, but there had to also be a certain level of trust in Abraham knowing that Isaac was responsible enough to take all of this that Abraham had. And also, we likely understand that Isaac was, just as Abraham thought, He was a man who was going to be responsible. He was a man that was going to take all of this and do good with it and not just be, you know, selfish with it and make all kind of foolish mistakes with it. But rather, he took those blessings and he was serious about it.
And God was serious in the blessings that he himself would give to Isaac. Of course, we just noticed out of chapter 26, well, really before we even get to 26, we can see Genesis 25, verse 11, after the death of Abraham, it says that God blessed his son Isaac. We've already noted Genesis chapter 26 and verses 12 through 14, just how richly God blessed Abraham for the work that Abraham had to put in there in the land. There were these great blessings that that Isaac received from God.
Absolutely. You know, and God blessed Isaac so much so that those who asked him to leave realized that it was better to have him on their side than for him not to be with them, right? You see that in Genesis chapter 26, verses 26 through 29, even where, you know, Abimelech, as we were just stating, he recognized just how blessed Isaac was and recognized, you know, where the source of these blessings were coming from, and he was wanting to have that relationship with him and maintain that relationship with him. Well, the reason being, he saw the blessings that God continued to provide Isaac with.
But all of these blessings would not remain with Isaac.
They sure wouldn't. And here's where we get to that little tidbit, that little snippet that we saw even earlier on, right after these twins were born, Isaac and Esau, and that, you know, we made mention that if we begin to show any kind of favoritism, it is definitely going to be problematic. Well, here's where we begin to see the problematic nature of that favoritism.
You know, we would expect Esau, being the older of the two boys that were born to to Isaac and Rebekah. Excuse me. We would think, again, Esau being the older, that he would be the one who receives the blessing. And in our minds, that makes sense. Now, God had already told Rebekah that the older would serve the younger. There's already indication way back then that it's actually going to be Jacob who is blessed. But Isaac is still planning to bless Esau. And it's not until there's some deception that takes place that Jacob comes in. He's already taken the birthright. Now he's going to take the blessing once we come into Genesis chapter 27. And of course, there are problems that result because of the favoritism between the two boys and the parents.
There really is, you know, and go all the way back to some of the things that we stated at the very beginning of this episode as it pertains to Abraham and Isaac, and how Abraham's great faith played a big part in Isaac's life. His, you know, shortcomings likely also played a big factor in his life. Well, we start to see some of these problems that they might have had in their own house when you look at the conspiring or the you know, this behind-the-back kind of conversations that are taking place, trying to make sure that the younger gets the blessing and the older doesn't get the blessing. And, you know, you have Isaac wanting to do one thing, you have Rebekah wanting to do another thing, and there's all this kind of going on behind each other's backs in an effort to make sure that this one gets a blessing and that one doesn't, right? So there's a lot of problems that come up right here at the very end, you know, of Isaac's life that could possibly be, you know, fruit of his own doing, you know.
Right. But despite these problems that that Isaac reveals from time to time, I can't help but go back to Genesis chapter 26 and the blessing that God gives to him in Genesis 26 verses 2 through 5, especially what we see at the end of Genesis 26 and verse 4. Because even though Isaac was a good man, he still had his problems. Isaac isn't going to be the one who's going to take care of the problem that began back in Genesis 3. But through Isaac, we're going to see the one who would take care of the problem. In you, or in your seed, God says, all nations of the earth shall be blessed. And all of this is pointing towards the one who would come through Abraham, through Isaac, the one that's going to come through the line of Jacob, leading all the way up to Christ Jesus.
Absolutely. You know, there is so much more that could be discussed with Isaac, and here we are. We're almost 45 minutes into this episode.
I'm impressed. I thought we were going to take longer than that.
Honestly, I did too. We have more notes for Isaac, I think, than we've had for anybody else. So many notes. There's a few times I think I got lost as far as where we're at and even got ahead of us, but I'm going to blame that.
I've got my checklist, and on my checklist, I've been checking them off as we've gone.
I'm going to blame that on the fact that you sent me this copy, and it's not space like I normally have mine space, so it was hard for me to keep up.
Hey,
that's
just
a terrible thing to blame something on somebody else, isn't it?
You know, I'm gonna avoid the conflict right now. I'm gonna go dig another well, and you know, I'll just keep digging until you finally start, you know, doing your format like mine.
That's right. I tell you what, let's just kind of recap here. Just a few things that we could say about Isaac, and you know, we'll point out a couple of weaknesses that we have already noted just as a way of reminder here at the end of this discussion, and then we'll point out a couple of strengths to close on as it pertains to Isaac.
So as far as some weaknesses go and things that we see in the life of Isaac that, you know, we we might need to be on guard for in our own lives as well, is that idea of showing favoritism, you know, at any point in life, but especially within the home towards one's own children. We need to avoid showing that favoritism. At the same time, with the weaknesses, we can think about how it is that we need to watch out to be on guard that we don't make the same mistakes as those before us. Thinking specifically for Isaac about how he would follow in his father's poor example in lying about his wife being his sister because of fear. And then the final weakness here is the fact that Isaac showed at times that he may not have been the strongest leader in the home. We see that especially in all the deception that would take place and some of the scheming behind the back and the manipulation that would promote Jacob to being the one who is blessed over Esau.
Yeah, and the few strengths we have, primarily in the first one that we really discussed, was his obedience, right? We saw that even in that very difficult moment, even when he struggled to understand why he's the one that's going to be, you know, the sacrifice, but he was still obedient. You know, one who's obedient even to the point of death, he's willing to give his life. So there's something, you know, great that can be said about that kind of obedience. But also, we see that he was a very patient man. You know, you think about even the patience that he had when he was willing to wait for God's will to take place within his marriage, right? There was a man sent to another area to go and to find a wife for him, and all the while he's waiting. As a matter of fact, when they come back with Rebecca, he's out in a field and he's meditating, right? He's waiting this out patiently for God's will to unfold in his life. So he's a very patient individual, it seemed. The third thing that we could say about him as far as his strengths is his faith in God. I think it is very much evident throughout almost everything we discussed with Isaac, except for the one moment where he lies about who his wife is, saying that it is his sister. But for the most part, it seems like his faith was pretty solid throughout all the narrative and all the information that we have about him. Now, the final thing, and we have just discussed it very recently, but the final thing would be that he is a peacemaker. And we saw that through, well, great hardship and a whole lot of effort and a whole lot of sacrifice. He did what he had to do to maintain the peace.
And as is the case with really all of these individuals we've looked at so far in this season, there's so much more that could be said. But I think that, you know, this is a pretty good sampling here of Isaac's life and some really valuable lessons for us to learn for the positive as well as some of those negatives that we need to be watching for in our own lives.
Absolutely. And just know that, you know, it's not always the case that we're going to see these moments coming, the ones that might blindside us. It gives us that much more reason to be on guard always, because in any given moment, we could have a little slip-up just like Isaac has, even in all our efforts to maintain and live a faithful life as we have seen Isaac live. We need to be on guard. We need to make sure that we're being that loving spouse in our home. We need to make sure that we are being the leader that we need to be so that it does not create contentions or problems within our household. And at the end of the day, we just need to make sure that we're striving to glorify God.
Absolutely. And that's a recurring lesson, really, that we've seen in just about all of the people we've looked at up to this point, is that importance of glorifying God. I guess the one exception we might think would go all the way back to, even in the negatives of Cain and of Satan.
That's true.
We still see the importance of it there. It's just they weren't doing it, and they show us why it's important to do it.
That's right. Well, we hope that these podcasts have been a benefit to you. We have greatly enjoyed them. It's been a pleasure to be in here with you, Preston, to do these podcasts and to do the studies and, you know, to put our thoughts together and lay them out on paper, whether the format's in the correct format or not. It's been a lot of fun. I've enjoyed it. And we hope that you have too. And we will have a email address there with the information to the podcast. So if you have any thoughts or concerns or any questions or any recommendations, you can email us there at the email address that will be provided. We thank you for listening, and we hope that you just continue to grow day by day. That's our desire, and that's what we hope, you know, takes place in our life as well as yours.
And we'll be back with you on April 1st as we kick off our second season.